broadcasting.org, and the sixth is this.
The seventh.
This is October 7th. Y'all can't keep up with the date. It's Saturday, October the 7th, 2023, and this is the show Thought Crime Live. I'm your host, Stephen Douglas Whitener, and this is Republic Broadcasting Network, and I'm really, really happy to be here with y'all. Come in the middle of a little thought crime with you today. I have a great guest coming up, and before, let me take care of a little business before I get to the guest, y'all. You know that Republic Broadcasting is a listener-supported network, and the only way that we're able to do this is because you're helping us out. And I'm just call it Mr. Stadmiller's neighborhood. Sometimes it's almost 2 years now since Mr. Stadmiller died, and I'm really proud that we're still keeping the thing going. You know, I'm really proud of the listeners, and I really appreciate that people listen. I get positive feedback, and you don't know how much that means to me. It's like somebody saying, "Well, hey, you did a good job," or something. They like, or even that they learned something. Well, I appreciate that too. But please financially support the network if you can. If they get a monthly amount they know coming in, that takes a lot of the stress off of it, instead of having to do this all the time. Say, look, we're behind. No, and I don't know where it is right now today, but it had caught up by half the last time I mentioned this, and I want to thank the listeners, and I'll give those details out about how to donate again after the break. I just wanted to get that out of the way, and I have a guest joining me now is a doctor from South Carolina here locally. This lady is named Dr. Karen DeVore, and she testified. I have her testimony that she gave in front of a committee. I think it was a committee, but it was a group, South Carolina state level government, and it was some listening panel, I suppose, is the way it was phrased. About the COVID pandemic response, and it was very she was spot on with what she was just saying what she saw in her practice. And are you with me, Dr. DeVore? Can you hear me okay?
I'm here, thank you.
Oh, great. Okay, look, I'll let you introduce what the clip is exactly, because you were there, but I did listen to what you said, and that might be the quickest way to get into this. And you can go ahead and tell us who and where you're Spartanburg, a dermatologist at Spartanburg. I didn't, you know, you 30 years of practice, I believe, and up to 50 patients a day. I heard that you had been seeing, but let me let you describe this testimony, who you were talking to when you gave this. And there's 7 hours of testimony, y'all. Let me say that before we go on. Say hello to the chat room. If you're in the Thought Crime Live chat room, there's a Thought Crime Live chat hango. And I did ask someone to put this whole 7 hour clip in there if anybody wants to refer to it as well. Yeah, go ahead, please.
Well, on September 12th, as you alluded, there was a 7 hour listening panel on the COVID response in South Carolina. It was a Senate Medical Affairs Subcommittee, but they did have some, they invited representatives from the House to be there too, so it was kind of a joint committee. And they had testimony from physicians, attorneys, lay people, and DHEC was there also. And yeah, I'm glad you posted the whole 7 hours, because there's a lot of really good information, and some of it, I would even say, is bombshell information.
Okay. I have not watched all 7 hours yet, but I did hear that from other people, too, so I put the whole 7 hours there. And let me you know, first, let's just go ahead and play your testimony first, and we'll refer to that, and then tell the rest of your story as we go along. Would that be okay?
Okay, that'd be great.
All right, thanks. Hey, can you play that for us, Frank? Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Our final presenter is Dr. Karen DeVore.
Thank you, Dr. DeVore. I'll ask one last time. Can we ask questions along the way, or should we wait till the end?
You can ask whatever you'd like.
Okay, thank you so much.
I want to say good afternoon. I want to thank all of you all for the privilege of speaking up for medical freedom for both physicians and patients in this state. Y'all have heard a lot of information today, and y'all have been very attentive, and you've asked great questions. And I don't know that I have a whole lot more to say than what has been reiterated already, but I'm going to try to make this personal. My name is Karen DeVore. I have been practicing dermatology in Spartanburg, South Carolina for over 30 years. I have a high-volume practice. I see about 50 patients a day. I have been prescribing hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin. They've been safe, they've been effective, they've been affordable, and I've been prescribing them for over 30 years. Every time I've written the drug for 30 years, it was off-label. I have not treated malaria in the state of South Carolina, nor river blindness in the state of South Carolina. So why? I mean, I had no pushback from pharmacies or insurance companies for 30 years. Everything I did was technically off-label. Why in 2020, all of a sudden, the FDA was calling ivermectin horse medicine? Physicians were not allowed to write the medicine? Pharmacists would not fill it for you? You know, where were the FDA, CDC, medical boards, pharmaceutical boards to be truth tellers in all this? Because I had a long experience writing these safe and affordable drugs, and I knew that there were trials that showed in SARS-CoV-1, that was the virus, you may remember a lot of Asians wearing masks in 2002, and I knew we had no FDA-approved early interventions. Patients were basically told, I mean, they weren't even seen by a lot of their primary care doctors. They were basically told to go home, and if you can't breathe and you turn blue, go to the emergency room, and then we'll give you remdesivir and maybe put you on a ventilator. And this was occurring when many doctors across the United States and other countries were having great results with repurposed drugs, hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin. I was noticing that my long-term patients on hydroxychloroquine for autoimmune diseases like lupus, they were not getting COVID in 2020. So why wouldn't you try writing these drugs? Why wouldn't you do vitamin D and zinc? What did you have to lose? And really, ironically, somebody already alluded to this, South Carolina is a right-to-try state. But because these drugs were already FDA-approved for human use, even a terminally ill patient on a ventilator at the end of life was not allowed to try these drugs. How many lives could have been saved? And physicians have always had the ability to write off-label drugs. I mean, that just means writing an FDA-approved drug for a disease other than the FDA originally approved it for. Simple example. I'm a dermatologist. I could not treat cystic acne with tetracycline if I had to stay on FDA-approved labels. Could it be that these safe and effective and readily available drugs would have meant there would have been no emergency vaccine development, no coercion, no propaganda, no fear, no control, no cash cow for Big Pharma? I know you've heard today the PrEP Act and various other legal reasons that vaccine manufacturers are immune from any liability. Why would they spend time and money improving their product? I mean, that would hurt their bottom line. What other industry is exempt from liability if their product fails, proves dangerous, or is other than advertised? You've already heard the swine flu vaccine in 1976 was pulled after only 32 deaths. I don't mean only, those were deaths. But now we're over 1,000 times that many deaths. How many is it going to take? How many hospitalizations? How many disabilities before we recall these vaccines? So I began writing ivermectin for COVID-19 patients almost immediately. To my knowledge, not a single patient that I treated with ivermectin or hydroxychloroquine was hospitalized or died from COVID. Not only were there zero side effects, patients amazed me. They called me back. They told me how overnight they felt normal again. Within 8 hours, their fever was broken. Their rigors were gone. It was unbelievable. If I had not been witnessing such impressive clinical results, I don't think I would have continued to fight for my patients with the insurance companies and the pharmacies. Why would you deny this for anyone? But, you know, patients couldn't get the meds I was writing. I was practicing medicine within the bounds of my medical license, and both I and my patients were being harassed. Pharmacists refused to fill prescriptions. And unknown to me until COVID, South Carolina has a law, Section 404386, that allows pharmacists to have the authority to refuse to fill any prescription for any reason at any time. I just want to repeat that. pharmacist in South Carolina can refuse to fill any doctor's prescription for any reason at any time. Are pharmacists liable for withholding treatment? Pharmacists haven't been to medical school. They do not have the right to see and examine and treat patients with prescription drugs. I don't know how that's legal. So supplies of ivermectin become limited. Prices are elevated. Patients used to get ivermectin for $20 before COVID. At the height of the pandemic, it was $300 or $400. And you know what that did? It drove patients to Tractor Supply. You know what? It did work. It worked just as well. And then doctors and pharmacists started to be audited, including myself, from Blue Cross Blue Shield. Doctors were threatened with loss of their licenses and jobs. Our own South Carolina DHEC sent letters to physicians encouraging them to push the vaccine that was safe and effective and really discounting ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine. And then we can get to the issue of privacy and HIPAA laws. How can employers ask your vaccine status? I can't ask about a person's medical conditions when I'm hiring or firing them. Pharmacists started interrogating patients if they thought the prescribed ivermectin was for COVID. I had seen and examined the patients. I had discussed the risk and benefits of the drugs for the patients. I had told them it was off-label. Pharmacists acted like that never happened. And isn't it a privacy issue for them to be questioning patients? Like, are you on valacyclovir for a cold sore, or is it your genital herpes? Is it doxycycline for acne or a sexually transmitted disease? And a pharmacist has the right to decline one of those and not the other? And to pay, and insurance companies can pay for one of those and not the other? You know, if that wasn't enough, doctors were harassed and vilified for writing FDA-approved drugs that I knew how to administer, I knew how to dose, I knew how to handle side effects, but I wasn't promoting the emergency use vaccines that had no long-term clinical data and that were given to pregnant women and children down to the age of 6 months of age. I can assure you no patient was forced to take an off-label drug that they considered dangerous or horse medicine. I cannot tell you people were not coerced and forced to take an emergency use vaccine. And I don't understand why, if you chose to take the vaccine and you put your own life jacket on, I don't understand why you cared so much that someone else chose to make a different decision. Your life jacket and your vaccine that works and is safe as a and safe and effective should protect you, regardless of if your neighbor puts their life jacket on or not. Well, some patients trusted the government agencies. Let me tell you how that's turned out so far. In the last 2.5 years, since the vaccine has been widely promoted and many patients have taken it out of fear and isolation, the patients who took the vaccine still get COVID. And now I see patients, and I could not believe the attorney who spoke this morning said he had heard the same thing, because in 30 years of practicing dermatology, I've never heard people describe their symptoms this way. I am itching from my bones out. I am on fire from the inside. I see the most unusual rashes, and they don't respond well to treatment, and they last for months or years. I see previously well-controlled autoimmune diseases like psoriasis and eczema and lupus now totally out of control. I see aggressive, severe shingles. It is more painful, it is lasting longer, and this is even in those who've had the shingles vaccine. I see rapidly growing skin cancers, including basal cells that are just supposed to be traditionally very slow growing. I see squamous cells, cutaneous squamous cells, that are metastasizing much more often than they ever did before. And melanomas have become so unusual and much harder to diagnose. They are much more advanced at presentation. And I have to biopsy more and more things, and it's all in vaccinated patients. And then beyond my field, patients that I've seen regularly for 6 to 12 months, for every 6 to 12 months for 30 years, they're aging more rapidly. They've got unhealthy weight loss. Their balance is bad. They're falling. They're black and blue. They can't get on an exam table. And you see their medical updates since they were in, and they've had atrial fibrillation, pacemakers, heart attacks, strokes, blood clots, DVDs, pulmonary embolism, Parkinsonism, ALS, tremors, nerve palsies, miscarriages, infertility. Did I mention aggressive, new-onset cancers, recurrent stage 4 cancers after 20 years of remission? I know 4 people in one small zip code in Spartanburg that have rare leukemias. 3 of 4 of them are dead now. In over 30 years of medical practice, I've probably only known 1 or 2 people who had Lou Gehrig's or ALS disease. And they were distant and not really, you know, third or fourth contacts. I now know 3 people in my immediate range of contact. I know a small middle school in the lower part of the state where 3 14-year-olds are struggling for their life with cancer. I went until I was in med school before I had a classmate that died of cancer. I've got 4 kids who went to medical school, who went through school and college and graduate school, and not a single one of them knew of a classmate that died of cancer. A week ago, I saw a 60-year-old man who's previously healthy, working full-time, got the 2 vaccines, 1 booster, 3 months later diagnosed with his first cancer, bladder, 2nd cancer, prostate, 3rd cancer, stage 4 lung. Am I to believe that's just coincidence? I can't turn a blind eye to this and pretend I don't see it. I can't ignore the elephant in the room these past few years. The vaccines have changed the whole medical landscape. People are suffering, and I think they're dying needlessly. The medical field, its boards, hospital protocols, pharmaceutical industry, CDC, FDA, DHEC, NIH, all have been publicly discredited. I don't know if we can regain public trust. I pray to God we can. I urge you today to stand up for medical freedom, for patients, for physicians. Please do not allow vaccine mandates that have little safety data while harassing patients who have other effective treatments. Remember, it is our Hippocratic Oath to first do no harm. Thank you for your time and attention.
Thank you, Dr. DeBoer. Does anyone have any questions?
Okay. Hey, thanks.
Thank you so much for your
that, Frank. We'll come back right after the break and talk about that. Thought criminals, hold on. We'll be right back.
The next round of the worst financial crisis in 100 years is coming, people, and the government is out to make you and I pay for it. And will your savings survive a global banking wipeout? What happens when the U.S. sees hyperinflation? What if taxes soar not only for the rich? Can you survive if the stock market tanks? Look, between a stock market wipeout, waves of bank failures, soaring government spending that will lead to hyperinflation, and the destruction of the dollar's value, isn't it time that you prepare for the uncertainty which lies ahead? Protect your money now or forever kiss it goodbye. My friends, I offer you over 6 decades' experience of hard asset ownership and knowledge, and I'm prepared to handle the smallest detail in the balanced protection of your portfolio. For as the future of uncertainty continues to blanket this nation of ours, I believe that I can offer you the privacy, safety, security, and possibly some profitability which you deserve. And so I invite you to visit SierraMadrePreciousMetals.com for further information regarding protecting your wealth. Or call me, Jeffrey Bennett, at 602-799-8214. Or by email at KettleMoraine, Ltd. at Cox.net for private consultation. Once again, our phone number is 602-799-8214. It's almost Friday.
Are you one of the millions of people who feel like there is a dark cloud hanging over their heads whenever they're using pharmaceutical drugs? For some, the short-term relief can turn into an opioid addiction nightmare. Have you ever wondered why CBD oil is a billion-dollar industry? It's because it works better than opioids and is actually healthy for you. However, CBD oil is stripped of all other helpful compounds found in the hemp plant. According to neuroscientists, the whole hemp plant, otherwise known as hemp paste, is even more effective than the chemically processed CBD oil. Are you ready to take back your health? You can try hemp paste for the price of a cup of coffee.
hemppaste.com/RBN. Free shipping on orders over $50. See the banners for Hemp Paste at republicbroadcasting.org and visit hemppaste.com/RBN.
Crime Live on Republic Broadcasting Network, republicbroadcasting.org. And my guest today is Dr. Karen DeVore, a practicing dermatologist from Spartanburg, who sees about 50 patients a day. And she's just we just played her testimony before. Refresh my memory of what this committee was, Doctor, and let me turn it back to you to let you go ahead. That was terrific. That's the best I've heard that put at someone, what the producer said, and someone texted me solid testimony there while we were playing that. I was very impressed by what you said, and I mean, some of it may be anecdotal, I guess, but it's your experience, and you're right there on the front line of this thing. So, thanks for doing that.
You're welcome. And like I said, it was a South Carolina Medical Advisory Committee, Senate committee, but joint. They had some House members there too. And, you know, it's back on in Archives, SouthCarolinaStateHouse.gov. And if you go to Archives for September 12th, Medical Affairs Committee, you can find the whole thing also.
And I did have that. I did have someone post that in our chat. And I just, I am shocked in a sense by what you said, but I knew this was going on and that people had been having these reactions. And I, you know, we could go a lot of places with that. That act that you mentioned about giving that gives the vaccine companies immunity, and whatever. Where else can you get that? You know, everybody else could get sued or something, but they don't. They have that's special. And how this thing is just—it's so. We could even go down to what COVID actually was or not, but anything that. Resulted in any extra deaths was protocol driven, I believe. Would you concur with that? That there's no real evidence, I don't believe, that a novel virus made it around the globe as they say it did. I just don't think that's possible, honestly, myself.
I think there's many unexplained, unusual, and suspicious things around the COVID virus and the treatment protocols and how the world responded to it. Everything, you know, red flags were going off everywhere that things were not as normal.
And they had the White Coat Brigade out there with Fauci and all of these people to let us know that it's fine. It just, so a lot of people have noticed this, but not many, not a lot, fewer and fewer doctors have been willing to speak up, you know, and it's, I just want to applaud you.
Do you remember
for that
when those very brave frontline physicians stood on the Supreme Court steps and tried to get the word out? And, you know,
yes.
One of them has ended up in jail for doing that. And, but, you know, the word was trying to get out, but the mainstream media was not letting it happen.
And so then almost like they were in on it.
Pardon?
Just like all of these false flags and whatever, this we talk about psychological operations on this network a lot and things like that too. And this is a very pretty awake audience, and we've heard a lot of these things here before, but you see it every day. And I think back of my own experience. You know, I wish I'd never had a vaccine myself personally. If I could have make it so I never gave any to my kids, I wouldn't. I go back and I think of sudden infant death syndrome that we're having. And it was just when something new had been introduced, they were giving the babies. I think if we go back, you could probably find an epidemiological a link to that, at least circumstantial enough to investigate. But no, we can't do that because we're protected.
I think Steve Kirsch has done a lot of research on that. And I think, you know, now all of a sudden we don't just have sudden infant death syndrome. We've got sudden adult death syndrome. Mm-hmm. And that seemed to come out about this same time, too.
Yes.
And I would refer your listeners to the first hour and a half of that testimony if they're interested just in vaccines in general and some of the things that we do for our children and are they safe or not, is there a link to autism or not. The attorney from New York, I think his name was Adam Seary, he says, for instance, the hepatitis B vaccine that is given day one in the hospital to newborn babies, and again, hepatitis B should be a problem of, drug abusers and homosexuals and blood transfusions. I don't know how many 24-hour-old babies need that protection anyway, but we're giving them a vaccine that was tested in like 150-something children, and they were followed for 5 days, and that was enough for the FDA and the CDC to say this is safe and effective. And no, there's no link to autism, there's no link to cancers, there's no link to autoimmune diseases.
Yeah, I hear the break coming up, Doctor. Hang on, Thought Criminals. We'll be right back.
Okay.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
What if Extendivite really works, but you find that hard to believe and you spend precious time looking for someone to say, just try it? I have my help today because of Extendivite, and if I did not take a leap of faith and try it, well, I would be on disability today. Take one bottle of Extendivite as suggested for 60 days to find out for yourself. No need to stop any other meds you may be on. You know by now that they are not working for you. Before the 60 days are up, I know that you will feel Extendivite working for you and will want to take another bottle. Life is too short. Get your Extendivite today. Extendivite is available in capsule or liquid form for just $69.95 for a 2-month supply. To get started, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with
Extendovite. Tejibo Tea Club's original Pure Pau de Arco Super Tea helps build red corpuscles in the blood, which carry oxygen to our organs and cells. Our organs and cells need oxygen to regenerate themselves. The immune system needs oxygen to develop, and cancer dies in oxygen. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The tea is also organic and naturally caffeine-free. A one-pound package of tea is $49.95, which includes shipping. To order, please visit drinksupertea.com. The first word is drink, spelled D-R-I-N-K, then the word super, then the word tea. The complete website is drinksupertea.com or call us at 818-965-9113, Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. California time. That's 818-965-9113, drinksupertea.com.
Hi, Tom Bolton for Ease Off. I know so many of you are finding our EZ4 carcass drop and lift an essential tool for your meat processing operation, but today I want to spotlight four of our new products. First, our right height hog cradles with steel or aluminum frames. Our customers love this back-saving innovation that enhances sanitation and speeds production. Next, our beef cradles with stainless steel or aluminum frames eliminate rust and corrosion. We hope you'll compare our quality and prices for this essential part of your processing line. Our cradles are especially effective when used with our power skinner. And finally, our hook tumbler will keep your hooks clean and polished. EaseOff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too.
EaseOff, LLC, 417-932-6419.
Welcome back, Thought Criminals. You're listening to Thought Crime Live. I'm your host, Stephen Douglas Whitener, and I wanted to let y'all know that after my show, Paul Edward Stevenson will be live again today, I was told, and I look forward to hearing him, too. And don't miss Michael Gaddy's The Rebel Madman Radio at 4 today. And I have Dr. Karen DeVore on with me, and we're talking her experience as a dermatologist in Spartanburg, South Carolina. And I did say, you know, that may have looked at that with being anecdotal, some of the things you said, but you are a practicing physician with the clinical data to back up what you say. I think that's very powerful.
Well, I hope it is. It opened my eyes to a lot of things, and I just want to share my experience and hope that people will start to pay attention and make better informed consent decisions for themselves and their families and their health.
And you mentioned how the law was that in South Carolina that the pharmacist could refuse to write that. Do you know how that came about? I was wondering what the rationale could have been, but at this point, and I wonder at what point that law was passed. You know, when that so many things seem to just fall into place for this global pandemic. At once, it had its PR department before they even found the first. Case, it seems to me. I'm sorry, but that's just what it looks like.
Yeah, apparently it's not a new law, but you know, I've never just had it enforced until they didn't want to write or didn't want to fill prescriptions for ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine. I think someone told me it was put in place so pharmacists wouldn't have to fill abortion pills.
Now that was what I thought that might be the rationale. I was, but the way you phrased it with the what we want this antiviral for, or what do you want this, is if you know, that's a very good way to put it too, the way you brought that out. And I wondered if that was how it came about. I'm not familiar with the history, but that just seemed to be, that would be one way for the state to allow pharmacists to not do that. But you know, you can't, I don't know that I can understand that part of it, but they get the partner to fill it or something. That's like, I guess, I don't know. If you agree to do that, I don't know. That is a argument that I don't know the answer to, really, because I wouldn't want to force someone to prescribe that if it went against their belief.
It's really interesting. For 30 years, no pharmacist ever pushed back on a hydroxychloroquine or an ivermectin mm-hmm. prescription. And, you know, if they want to say, well, it's not FDA approved for COVID, well, everything I wrote it for was not FDA approved. I mean, I've never treated malaria. That's what hydroxychloroquine's approved for. I've never treated river blindness. That's what ivermectin's approved for. So even that doesn't hold water. I mean, for 30 years I was writing it off label. Mm-hmm. I really, and I don't know the answer to this, but I would love to know who almost simultaneously across the country with all the pharmacies, particularly the big chains, all at one time said, we're going to question all these prescriptions and not fill them. And I don't know what other states' laws are. I'd be curious to know about that. But at least in South Carolina, when I pushed back and asked questions, all of a sudden I had the legal team from CVS contacting me and letting me know that, yes, indeed, for any reason, any prescription, any patient, any time, they could refuse to fill a prescription.
Hmm.
And apparently they could make a judgment call on, you know, it wasn't just, you know, they could fill some prescriptions for that medicine, but not others.
It's almost like an extermination protocol, isn't it? It just, I mean, it just bogs. And then they've been treating things one way for all of these years, too, like the bacterial pneumonia, for instance. If you do get, you know, that killed probably more. And what it means to die or have COVID, I mean, it just was so PR-driven and everything and protocol-driven when you look at it. I first thought, oh, gosh, that thing they've been saying is going to happen is happening. People dropping dead over there, and it's all around the world. It just didn't happen. There's no way it could have done what it did from China to here to there and all. And it made me question the whole science of all of it. And now, you know, we don't have to go down that rabbit hole to know that it's being used to bring about, you know, a global system with the digital currency and the vaccine passport and stuff. People who would never have even thought that before. This guy, another person that I follow who's a biologist, has been talking about this a lot. And, you know, it's just that just came together.
All
so
those issues that you just mentioned, I think they're all related.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. And the same players, the same people, the usual suspects that are farming us, you know, that's what's going on. We talk about I have that song, Masters of War, at the beginning. And whenever they wage in war on something like war on cancer or war on drugs or war on terror, the war is really on us. And the government's waging that war on us is the way I feel about it. And I've kind of felt that way for a while, but then COVID just completely it's all against us. Even like you said, you named all of these institutions that people had faith in, like even maybe even the integrity of elections people had faith in, but they just kind of rubbed it in our face that nope, shut up peasant, comply, you know, that's been in so many people's face that I think maybe they've overplayed their hand. I hope so. You mentioned to me how some of this testimony went, and you mentioned there was one person there that had a mask on, and who was that? That is a great visual. I haven't watched all that yet, but I do plan to watch all this testimony.
Oh, some of your listeners need to watch to the end, because the only person in 7 hours of testimony that had a mask was Dr. Zimmer, who is a psychiatrist, and he is head of South Carolina DHEC. And he was the very last person, I believe. He followed my testimony. And, he wore a mask. None of the legislatures had on masks, and none of the other people present in the building had on masks.
But, wow.
And I think your listeners, and I think this is bigger than a South Carolina problem, but there were testimony from two doctors maybe midway through, a Dr. Philip Buchholz and a Dr. Jancy Lindsay. And Dr. Buchholz is from South Carolina, University of South Carolina, there in Columbia, and he gave testimony that he had tested all the vials of Pfizer vaccine given in Columbia, South Carolina, and he had found DNA plasmids, DNA contamination in all of those vials. And to call it contamination is generous, because Dr. Yancey testified that 30% contaminated DNA has been found in these vials. And their work is not alone. Other physicians and doctors have reported this, too. And if you've got this in your vaccines, I don't know when we've allowed a contaminated medical product to be used and stay on the market and injected into our children and our six-month-old and our pregnant women.
The Cutter affair, was it, back with the polio vaccine, where they gave them the live vaccine and knew it the whole time? That was one incident. And, you know, I just question the whole vaccine technology in general. I wish I had never been exposed to it. And this contamination, I mean, that sounds like they're ramping up with the E. coli, making a big old batch, you know, instead of a craft brew, they're making Miller Lite, and then they try to extract the RNA they want, but they can't get rid of all of the debris from the the bacterial factory, and that ends up having DNA in it.
And then some of that E. coli can end up in your gut, and you can just continue to produce these spike proteins. And not only can you be, you know, putting foreign DNA into these cells, but you can be putting DNA that causes resistance to antibiotics. You could have a reaction to the bacterial endotoxin, which could account for like a sudden death and all these severe immediate reactions that we've seen. They need to know, and I mean, I really personally believe they need to pull these vaccines until they know for sure, and they test them to see what's in them.
Well, I agree with you there, but I don't want to imply that, oh, but if we make it safer, it's okay. This stuff is very flawed technology. I don't trust it at all. I'm opting out. You know, I think anybody with common sense at this point is going to, until these people can prove themselves again and reestablish trust in the, their customers, whatever, you know, whatever they see us as. That's we're just being harvested as much as we can by this system and have been for a while, is my opinion, especially
the medical industrial
complex.
There are reasons that the mRNA vaccines have not come to market for 40 years. So I've got problems with the mRNA vaccines themselves also, but they go even bigger if we've got contamination in them. DNA is much more easily integrated into your God-given DNA than RNA is. I mean, RNA can be reverse transcriptized and can do it, but you put DNA in and you've just upped the ante of this going into your DNA. And DNA is, you know, long-term. DNA can be passed to future generations.
Mm-hmm. And they said there was spike DNA, which I guess that's probably just a single strand. I'm not sure the difference. The spike protein I got, but the spike DNA probably is just one single strand, I guess. I heard them talking about that being in the plasmids as well. And, I'm no virologist, but,
But people
I try to re-examine everything I think I know every day. You know, I'm trying to learn more, and just because I haven't yet, you know, I have to be willing to do that. That's kind of the whole idea of my show, is to try to learn from you guys and my guests and the audience too. We have a very a good, smart audience here. I hope that some of them will call in next hour. You feel okay to take calls with us?
Sure. And I think that all of us have awakened to this. I mean, I didn't expect to have to learn and relearn DNA and RNA and reverse transcriptase and DNA plasmids and E. coli. And, you know, I kind of practice clinical medicine. And but this has been a learning curve.
They're counting on that, too. And they are trying. They have created an illusion of consensus amongst a bunch of people. And I think one of the people they used to do it was Brett Weinstein, it was a thing called looking at the very origins, looking for the origins, and they created this origin, this collusion, illusion of consensus that around the globe that something had, you know, moved, and it was, oh, maybe it was in this cave in China, and then there's the bat cave, and then there's Wuhan, and there's this story, and they all got the same information at the same time. It seems that Farron cleavage site was where you needed to go. You know, it's weird that all these people got that little detail. It just, you know, looking back on it, I can see how consent was manufactured with the media. You know, you can too. I mean, I follow a person who's analyzed that, and I hope he'll come on the show sometime too, y'all. I'd love to hear the two of you together, actually. But that's just what's happened, I believe. And let me ask you, how early you questioned the COVID narrative?
If you want to know the truth, during the 2 weeks to flatten the curve, I was supposed to be in Israel, and my office was already closed for those 2 weeks. So I had a lot of time on my hand, and I received some kind of notification from, I think it was the Medical Board of Examiners about how to code for COVID deaths. And at the time, I thought, this is odd. I've been practicing medicine for over 30 years. I've never received information on how to code for deaths. And I'm a dermatologist. I don't really think I'm going to be coding for COVID deaths. So I sort of kind of deleted the email, but it hung in my mind, and it bothered me. I went back a day or two later and pulled it back up and was like, oh, my gosh. You know, when I was a medical student, you were just told to fill out a death certificate, and it really wasn't hard. You didn't need directions to do it. You know, date, time, place, what do you think they died of? Well, if they're on the cancer ward, or they just had a heart attack, or they had a gunshot wound, it usually wasn't a hard decision. But all of a sudden, I was realizing that they were changing what we've been doing for years. And even though I personally probably wouldn't be involved in that, I think that really concerned me to start paying attention. And then I would see things online, and I'd want to go back and pull them up again and listen to them again or share them, and they were just disappearing. And I'm like, this is just bizarre. You know, something unusual is going on here that I've never experienced before. So I started paying attention very early. And then when I started hearing that hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin were useful, I bought a bottle for the office. We had it at the office early on. And because I had written these drugs, I knew they were safe. I don't know if I've ever had somebody call the office back with a side effect or a complaint. I get more complaints on writing an antibiotic and side effects and problems than I do ivermectin or hydroxychloroquine. You know, and I thought to myself, what have you got to lose? Why would you not even try a safe, generic, affordable drug if you're telling me everybody's going to die and there's nothing else you can do?
Yeah.
So very early, well, I was skeptical on this, and just, you know, I'm going to wait and see. I'm not rushing to take a vaccine. I worked 2020 when there was no vaccine, saw a lot of patients, had a lot of contact, did not get sick. You know, I think when you have a vaccine come on the market that is so safe and effective, you have to threaten people to take it. That ought to tell you something. I think that
that's well put, doctor. Thank you. Yeah.
When you have healthcare workers who worked through COVID without a vaccine, with a lot of unknowns, a lot of fear, and then all of a sudden they're saying, you know what, we don't want to take it. Had they already had it? Did they have natural immunity? Or had they seen what COVID did to people? And then had they seen what the vaccine was doing to people? But when you've got frontline people saying, we don't want this vaccine, we'll lose our job over it, that should have really woken people up too. That's a strong statement.
Absolutely. I agree that it just, like I said, a pandemic doesn't need a PR department to start with, but now, you know, and even with the flu shots every year, we're going to pay you to take this? What?
Yeah,
what?
Really?
What? Why? Really? Why? You know, I mean,
we're going to give you donuts and a hamburger and $100.
Just get your flu shot. And I fell for that in H1N1 time, and I was stupid enough to get four that year, and I would never the same since. You know, I noticed that my vision to start with, I don't know how that happened, but that you know, right after, you know, my eyesight was, I don't know, you know, that was one thing, and I just was really felt bad for a long time after, and I said, never again, why did I stupidly do that? You know, I fell for their psyop, you know, the tracking H1N1, and okay, you know, it was 2008-09 period, so they had us all distracted by the economic collapse too, but yeah, I learned my lesson. Okay, never again. I will not comply. Let me ask you: did you have people mask up in your office?
We did for a period of time, just because we wanted to stay open. I don't think any of us really thought it was effective, but if your patients thought that and they weren't going to come to the doctor otherwise, you know, we went through a period of, oh, taking your temperature at the door and waiting in the car, and we'll call you when your appointment is so you can come in. So I'm not going to say we didn't fall for that, or I'm not saying, I don't even want to say we fell for it. We complied with it.
Yeah, there you go. That's what there was a pandemic of, doctor, of fear and compliance, just like there always is with these psychological operations, I believe. Well, I think I'm just blowing through our last break. Hey, if y'all would like to join the conversation now, if you I need to give a disclaimer, but it's 512-248-8252 to ask. Please stay on topic, y'all. We're talking about the COVID psyop and et cetera. Did I miss the break, Frank? Or sorry, folks. Nope. Here we go, folks. We'll be right back. Oh, you cut it. Oh, okay. Sorry. Yeah. All right. Well, go ahead. Hey, doc. Let me go where we were. Yeah. Okay, sorry. I just looked up, and you know, it's not my first show, Doctor. I promise. But this, you're a great guest. Fine. Let me tell you, this is really the best that I have heard this put by someone who had the courage to seen it and said, "Okay, look, I was wrong about this, and now, you know, I'm going to try to do differently, and try to hold people accountable. The medical people, I mean, if people have this, are so invested in the system, so many of them that they just get afraid to call it out, and no matter what it is. I mean, if it's law or history or the especially big pharma and the medical complex, that's like the front line now. Just that's where we are, and that's where the battle's being waged. As you pointed out, they allow corporations to enforce these mandates, but so they're bypassing this government already.
Yeah, it's amazing how much power Big Pharma has over your medical education, medical schools, your textbooks, your journals, what gets published, what doesn't. It was eye-opening. And when have you ever seen so many Pfizer commercials?
I know it. Even on WORD, this local talk radio station, they had Pfizer commercials. It's like, come on, y'all. They're trying to call out the operation on one hand and then playing their commercials on the other. That was a little, you know, weird, you know. But it just goes a lot of things. I also think maybe hydroxychloroquine was the most effective, but ivermectin was pushed by a lot of people, like you talked about, that spike in price with the supply going down and stuff. And, you know, did you ever see, just a little aside maybe, but did you ever see the movie Contagion?
I did not, but I've heard it was pretty prophetic.
Well, it was, just one of the plot points was that someone had used a similar kind of treatment during this pandemic and then busted for it afterwards, that the fictional pandemic, the bat virus pandemic that was fictional, out of some place over, I don't know if it's in China, south of China, you know, it was predictive programming it, and they gave out all these questionnaires to everybody at the movie asking them to data mine for the upcoming operation. I think, you know, that happened too. Bill Gates was involved and with that, and you know, just this is deep rabbit hole, I know, but it's obvious what's going on to a lot of people and a lot of the listeners here too. And hey, we already have a caller. Let me go to Sherry in Kansas first. Hi, Sherry, thanks for calling.
Good morning, Doctor. I applaud you for your stance, and thank you for doing that. You know, the off-label use has been going on in the agricultural industry for a long time, and that translates to probably some of the problems you've seen. Nowadays, a lot of times these big mega farms will, on a grain crop, even if it's a non-GMO crop, they'll spray it a few days before they want to harvest it with Roundup or glyphosate, so it dies down evenly, so that residue is left on the grain. And there's all sorts of problems, gut problems even, that with glyphosate. But on vaccines, if you get a list and you can find them of the stuff in vaccines, anything that I understand that says dipole cells, that's generally from aborted babies. And what do you think happens when, you know, it's from a female and it's given to a male, or a male and it's given to a female? I mean, they don't know because they couldn't. There's no way they can track that kind of stuff lawfully. And
you're asking questions I don't think I'm going to have answers to. I mean, I definitely do think that vaccine research and the development of some of these cell lines has involved aborted fetuses. You are correct. And diploid would imply, yes, that there, you know, was two sets of chromosomes there. You know, how far back you want to take that, And what the potential implications are there, I can't even go there. I don't know. But I certainly think that was a reason, at least in my state, that I would sign medical waivers if someone, you know, was opposed to a vaccine because they believed it originated from aborted cells. I used that a lot as my reason for writing an exemption.
Yeah. Anyway, I just wanted to throw that in. Thanks, Doctor.
Good. You're very welcome. Pass the word.
Hey, yeah, thanks very much for the call, Sherry. And the DNA, human DNA in something is not good to inject there. It's just not going to be good. I mean, you're going to make yourself attack yourself, it seems like. That just doesn't make any sense to me. In fact, the whole thing, trying... transfection is not immunization, okay? The immune system, it's very specific. The lining of the gut and the lining of the lung stuff and your skin, but intramuscular injecting a concoction of poisons there does not create immunity. I think it's dumb to try it that way. Now that I've gone back and thought it over again, instead of having some white coat tell me how it really is, and that's how we, you know, cured the polio and whatnot. Oh, I hear the top of the hour break, Doctor. We can pick up on that when we come back. Y'all join us and commit some thought crime live.
Hello, hello, hello from beautiful Colorado. My name is Samuel Jung Kay, and I am currently the lead Shilajit hunter and master herbalist for Colorado Shilajit Company. In this video series, I will be discussing what we believe is the greatest of all adaptogenic superfoods and the single greatest natural healing remedy gifted to us by Mother Earth. I think you too will become as excited by this incredible substance called Shilajit as we were and are after our discovery of this amazing gift right here in beautiful, colorful Colorado. You may already know Shilajit by other names. Shilajit, Momio, Momi, Mami, Mineral Pitch, Asphaltum, and others. Shilajit literally translates to destroyer of weakness and conqueror of mountains. Shilajit has been in use for thousands of years and is considered as the highest valued cure-all of any earthly substance.
Look for the gold mountain and medical symbol logo in banners on republicbroadcasting.org to watch the full video and see more information. Use code GORBN when ordering. That's G-O-R-B-N.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.